Okay, so today is, what's today's date? March, is it
17th?
March 17th.
Oh, 17th.
March 17th, 2014. And we're just doing Mitzvah 400 today. And we had, so this is going to be a 10-minute recording, probably. We had a very long introduction where we talked about all kinds of things, but this definitely plays into Purim, as you'll see. And then, so this is the precept of the laws of inheritance. Right, it was probably one of your least favorite ones, right? Is what you're saying, that sarcastically? Or
no, that you can transfer to a daughter.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Or that you can't. Right. You can't.
Well, yeah.
Right, you can't. Both. Right, so it's both. So it's interesting. So this mitzvah is the dinei nachalot, right? The laws of inheritance. So here's the concept, because I just want to do conceptually. It's very long. You'll see this is like 6 pages long. And you rarely see this, but I just want to read you this one phrase. It's so nice. See how long it is.
Wow, really?
Yeah, but on page 185, wow. In the second paragraph on the bottom, he says, "The theme would grow lengthy, however, if I came to write it all, and this is not the task of my volume. But if you merit, my son, and will spread a fisher's net in the sea of the Talmud, it will bring up everything for you." I love that phrase. You know, like there's so much here. Just spread a fisher's net in the sea of the Talmud. But what do we want to see here? We see that inheritance is biblical. The concept of inheritance, it's not optional. It's biblical law. You don't get to pick how your money's inherited fully. Once when you're alive, you do get to pick. Whatever you want to do with your money is completely up to you. I have friends, the Blaus, who said, told me they're on the ski plan, right? They're in their 70s. A ski plan is spend kids' inheritance, right?
That was my parents.
If they want to go on a trip, they're going on a trip. They're not thinking, oh, I'm not going to travel first class just because I want my kids to inherit. They're thinking, well, I'm alive. I want to spend the money how I want to spend it. Spend, they're on the ski plan. Okay, so fine. So when you're alive, you can do whatever you want with your property. It's completely yours. It belongs to you. You can do what you want. Of course, there's certain halachas about, you know, you have to give a portion of your income, all that kind of thing. But basically, your property that you've been entrusted with by Hashem belongs to you. Once you die, however, it doesn't. It belongs to your inheritors. So who are your inheritors? So the first answer is your inheritors are your sons.
Sons, right.
Right, so it all goes to your sons. Now, included in the your sons, we do have to, you know, just to shorten it, but included in that concept, which the Chinuch and the Rambam count as the same mitzvah, is the mitzvah that the oldest son inherits a double portion. So what does that mean? So that means not double what everybody else gets, but double what each individual gets. So you have 5 sons, you have to divide your property into 6 portions. The oldest gets 2, and the rest get 1. Right, so that's how it works.
And what is the explanation for that?
So that's what I want to talk about here, right? So, well, let's just, before we get to the explanation for that. Okay, so the oldest gets double. And it goes first to boys. If there are no boys, then it goes to girls. No, so that's what you're saying and you like about this. So this is actually a shift. Really, the next mitzvah is a shift, which we'll talk about next time more at length. But the next mitzvah, which is Korban Tamid, the daily regular offering, it does mark a shift in the Torah from everything being given by Hashem, all the miracles and all the everything, Hashem does everything for us, to now it's our job to engage in the process. We do something in order to trigger certain realities, and Hashem tells us what to do, but offering a twice daily offering is part of our engaging in the system, rather than just being receivers. So a shift that happened also, and we see that shift in the written law, which is Hashem gave it to us, and the oral law, which is we have to work with it, we have to interpret it, we have to extract from it, okay? So a place that you see that shift in the written law is the Benot Tzlafchad, right? The daughters of Tzlafchad. So Tzlafchad,
I mean, it's not perfect.
No, but Tzlafchad, so Tzlafchad is a man who died with 5 daughters and no sons. So in dividing up the land, the daughters didn't get a piece. And so they go to Moshe and they say, that's not really fair, is it? I think we should get a piece. My father, just because he's dead doesn't mean he didn't have a portion in the land of Israel. He did, and we should inherit it. Don't just pass us by. So Moshe said, actually, that's interesting. I'm not quite sure what to do with that. So he went and spoke to Hashem about it. So instead of all the laws just coming straight through, this was a case of oral law engagement, almost, in the written law. because the oral law does depend on us asking questions and engaging with it to try to mine the depths and pull it out. So here you have the Pnot Slavchad being the human agent of the revelation of a law. Right, not just God giving it, but them asking a question that causes the law to be revealed. So they ask Moshe. Moshe goes to Hashem. Hashem says they have an excellent point, and here's the halacha. The halacha is the daughters do inherit. So this is seen as the strength, as a place of strength of women. So it's very clear that there is strength of women, that women have a portion. There's no question about it. This is one of the places where you could see that the Torah is not misogynist. There are Jews that are misogynist. That they don't get it from the Torah. They don't. Nevertheless, we're going to see where somebody could interpret that way, but it's not. So the Torah, not misogynist. Some Jews, yes, misogynist, but it doesn't have to. Its root is not in the Torah. It's in misunderstandings of things, and it's in just absorbing cultural stuff along the way. Okay, so we have everything going to the sons, not to the daughters. If there's no sons, then the daughters get. If there's no sons and daughters, then I think it goes to a brother. Or his progeny, and if it doesn't go that way, there's a whole order of how it goes, and if it doesn't go down, then it goes up. You would go back up to the uncle, the father. It goes all through the father's line, not through the mother's line. Anyway,
which is still problematic, but okay,
it seems
it's better.
Right. Okay, so
the fact is,
why?
If there aren't any sons, that's a big deal, because other cultures, what happened? I don't know that women got a port. Like if a king died without a son.
Oh,
well, there were queens.
Went to brothers.
Brothers, right. Not to daughters, right. This is very...
Right, so they did. So it's not just that, though. Now let's talk about why. And I'm not saying where...
Well, but the Lababa Chereba, he didn't have any.
He didn't have any.
Daughter. He
didn't have a son or a daughter. He didn't have children.
The last one, but the one his...
Right.
He was the son-in-law.
Correct, of the daughter. Right, so it did pass through the daughter in a way.
Sort of.
Not to
her,
but through her.
Right.
Okay,
arguing.
So now let's look.
But the daughters had to, if they marry, they had to marry within the father's tribe.
That's correct. So the Bnot Slavchad, who inherited that piece of ground
really
that belonged to his
go.
Tribe,
right.
It's still tribally connected.
Tribe, right.
So they, knowing that when girls marry, they marry into the boy's family, they had
required
to marry within the tribe to keep
so
the land
only if,
tribally based.
So only if they inherited did they have to marry inside
right,
the tribe.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
Only if they inherited?
Well, I'm asking. In other words...
if they were to get married, they had to marry within the tribe.
Yeah, that's
right,
what I was
because
saying.
They inherited.
Because they had
but
inherited
they
the line. But in general, if they didn't have any land...
Right, if they had,
they had no land.
Like their friend, right? You have daughter Tzlafchad. One of them is... Machla, right? Machla Tzlafchad, right? So you have her. Her friend, Malki, right? Malki Levi, right? She can marry whoever she wants because she doesn't have a piece of property attached to her. So Malki Levi can marry a Binyamit or a Yehudi.
She had brothers?
Because she had brothers.
She had brothers from
so
her.
She has
saying,
no land of
I'm
her
just
own.
Making up, right?
Right.
Machla Tzlafchad's friend.
It's a burden.
Right?
It's a burden of having land.
Yeah, she gets to marry whoever she wants in any tribe. But Machla Tzlafchad, because she owned
she had no
property,
brothers, right.
Right, she had to marry within the tribe to keep the land tribally
that was
based.
Better than having nothing, wouldn't she?
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Okay,
and
so
no
now
place to
you're,
go, I wonder.
So now everybody right now is viewing this still from what do we own rather
right.
than
so it
from
stays the, in the
right.
tribe.
So let's look at the spiritual thing here a little bit. Okay, so on 175. At the root of the precept, the Shor Shei HaMitzvah, right? Lies the aim that a man should know and consider that the world lies in the power of the divine master who watches over all his human beings. And by his goodwill and desire, each and every one in the world gains possession of the share of property that he attains in this world. So first of all, it all belongs to God. You only get to borrow it for as long as God says. And once you're dead, your borrowing period is over and it goes the way God says, not the way you might feel like it going. It's up mm-hmm. to God, right? Now his gift is blessed that it should continue forever for anyone to whom he gives it. Were it not that because of the primal sin, the decree of death was imposed on the world, right? So now you only get it for as long as you're alive. Yet merely because of the removal of one's body, it would not be just that there should be a cessation of God's blessed gift. Rather, it should extend further of itself to the body that developed in continuity from him, this being his son or his daughter. Okay, so now we have this concept that our bodies are part of a chain. And we give over, whether it's genetically or in some other ways, but genetically, generally, we give our bodies continue. So the reason why I say this relates to Megillus Esther, I think we ended last time, I told you my tiny little Purim Torah, is that when Mordechai is giving Esther the pep speech in the palace, Esther, you've got to go in and do it. Who knows if this is why you're in the palace in the first place. But what is his pep talk, really? He says, Esther, whatever you do actually doesn't matter for the Jewish people, because the Jewish people will be saved no matter what your choice is. But your choice matters for you and your father's house, because if you don't do the right thing, you and your father's house will be lost. So we said she's an orphan. She doesn't have a father's house, except for she does. Her father's house goes all the way back to King Shaul, King Saul, who was the one who was commanded with the destruction of Amalek, who failed to do so. So she carries part of, because she has part of his genetic material, she carries part of the family soul. So she has the opportunity here to fix the rupture in the family soul created by King Saul, right? So that's what this is saying here. There's family stuff going on, and these gifts belong to the family. They don't belong to the person. It's not about taking care of that person. It's about, there's an agenda with a family soul here, and there's a family body too. Okay, the family body's in many parts, but it's the family body that owns that stuff, not an individual. So the family body inherits. So
it's,
that first
it's interesting. If you move back to 173, this is really, it goes to that same thing. And it says,
which paragraph?
The second one. For this region, our sages of blessed memory said that if one leaving the inheritance ordained and said, let my son not inherit from me, or that particular son of mine should not inherit, or let my daughter be my heir, in an instance where he has a son, and blah, blah, blah,
right,
his words have no validity.
Right, he can't.
Which, because somewhere Hashem knew that families get into this.
Right.
Yeah. Get into this. This is my favorite.
Right.
She's getting the whole thing.
Right.
Or that son, he hasn't taken care of his mother, he hasn't taken care of...
Right.
And
so, right, you can't do it.
So that you can't disinherit.
You can't disinherit.
It does happen.
Right. You cannot disinherit. Yeah.
It's so interesting to me.
What you can do, because Torah law, you can subvert a lot of this. You can.
Yeah, I'm
but
sure.
But Torah law is that everybody inherits the way that they're supposed to inherit, and that the eldest inherits twice because he takes on his father's role. So his father's role is to care for the rest of the family.
He has responsibility. Mm-hmm.
He has responsibility. Mm-hmm. Now, it doesn't say you get twice so that you will care for your sisters, mm-hmm. but that is why he gets twice. Mm-hmm. He should care for the whole family. That it's his job. He takes on that. He's now the patriarch. Right, the top. I mean, I see it sort of like as an escalator, right? Except for going up the escalator, instead of going on to the top floor, you drop off, right? Mm-hmm. So as the top generation drops off and the next generation rises up, they're the new oldest generation. So it's their job to take care of who comes below them. So that's why the eldest, who has that position, it does receive the double portion, because he's the one who has
has
most responsibility of taking care of the rest. Now, I heard jokingly, and it makes some sense, that also one reason why he gets a double portion is because that's tuition. He's getting paid tuition because the parents learned how to parent on him. So they for sure made their most mistakes, and they ruined him the most. So he's entitled to tuition from the parents on how they raised him. So he gets one for inheriting and one for tuition.
One's for the mistakes they made.
Right. But really it's because he does have that responsibility as the firstborn. You know, anybody who is a firstborn or knows a firstborn knows that firstborns are driven and maniacal in some ways. And but take the responsibility.
No.
I'm a firstborn.
I'm a firstborn.
I'm just saying, firstborns are driven often.
Are you a firstborn?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Are you firstborn?
Yeah.
So they're driven. They're
You're
often
the
driven.
No, I'm the oldest. Oldest, yes. Very much so.
Yeah, they're often
the
driven.
My husband is the oldest.
He's an oldest in your, where are you in your family?
My husband is the oldest of his family.
Uh-huh. And you?
I'm the youngest.
You're the youngest in your
my family.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Yeah. So the birth order, I mean...
You got everything.
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
I was going to say,
The Jewish people.
Family, sort of.
sometimes the youngest are babies and sometimes the youngest are forgotten.
Right.
But the Jewish people are compared to the eldest of the family. We're considered the Bechor, the whole Jewish people altogether.
Responsible.
Because we do play that role among the nations. The nations are all children of Hashem, but we're the oldest child of Hashem. So the oldest child is that liaison between parent and the rest of the children. They are the leader of the children. They're the demonstrator of the children. They show the way. So that's why they have to get the double, because they are the leader. They're the one who has to take care of and do for others. Now that they can use that energy positively or negatively, but the point is that they have that. So here, what's important to understand is that inheritance is about what Hashem says. You don't get to pick. There, just so you know, there is one way to subvert it. My husband was in a lawyers and judges shiur for a short period of time in New York. Moshe Dov Stein, Alav Shalom, ran a shiur. And so he taught laws of inheritance. And he said one way, because he wanted to give practical halacha to these lawyers also, one way that if you're drawing up a will and somebody wants their daughter to inherit, what you do is you have the daughter inherit debt from the brothers. You can't give her your inheritance.
I think we talked about
this. But you can give debt. You can give debt. However, he said, that works halachically, but you're subverting the will of God. That's the truth. God said, this is how the inheritance goes. You can see it very clearly here. He said, I'm in charge. I entrusted you with this property, but you don't get it after you die. It's not up to you. You don't get to distribute it. There's a way it needs to be distributed, right? I pick the birth order, and therefore I pick who gets what. Right, so I picked that one's going to be the oldest, so that one's going to get double, and that's the way it goes, because I'm Hashem, and I get to pick. I'm the one who created this property, I'm the one who entrusted it to you, and you die, and now it's not yours anymore. So while you're alive, you can give it away if you want to, but once you die, it goes according to halacha.
So is that what, in today's world, is that what Orthodox families do?
So it totally depends. So as you know, some people keep halacha, and some people don't. And some people keep certain halachas, don't keep others. So it really, each individual family and how they deal with their lawyers and what they do. And some people are careful. Some people in business who need to make loans or take loans are very careful to not charge interest or pay interest, you know, from Jewish, and some people will create because you, for a large industry, let's say you're tearing down St. Anthony's Hospital and you need to rebuild something, you can't really do all that financing with that interest.
Right.
You can't. So there are legal ways to do the interest, but let's say you could do it with that. Let's say there was somebody who had, you know, who owned whatever bank and they would do it like that. They would rather. And some people would just rather not. They'd just rather get the money. So they'll just do the heter iska anyway. So it really, it's as individual as the people. But that is the appropriate thing to do, is to keep those halachas. So in the shiur that I was listening to in preparation, he said that it's recommended that even if you subvert it legally, you should at least leave over some portion of your money to be distributed completely in accordance with this.
Mm-hmm.
So that you do have that, yeah. So even if it's something, it should be that way.
Well, let's trust your kids to...
I guess the bank would have to be totally Jewish or something?
You're saying for business.
Yeah.
I'm not sure of all that.
You might run into a problem.
Right, so that's where the difference is. Banks are owned by corporations, not by individuals. So it's not like a Jewish-owned bank. You can't say that.
All you can say is
that the officers are Jewish, but you can't say that the owner...
The bank is really...
Yeah. So then what is that? Right. And in addition to all the corporations that are doing the building, like nobody... Like it's not one person that owns like something that's making an airport... You know, so it's not Jewish airport,
right?
So even if they're Jewish,
we'll
profit from it, right? It's just not. So you can't. That's not how it works today. So that's why we do have a heter iska. But if it's possible to do things, then people try to do it.
Oh, I think it's from one individual to another. If I were to lend money to another fellow Jew, then I shouldn't charge him interest.
Right.
Right. So that's very easy to do in the $50 realm, you know, in the $1,000 realm.
It gets much harder.
$1 million.
Yeah,
hundreds of thousands. Right. That's what I'm saying. It can be harder there. So I think a Sheldon Baron would have done that. You know, look, mm-hmm. somebody needs to start a business. He would say, here's $10,000. Here's $100,000. You'll pay me back when your business takes off. And that will be without interest.
I'm sure he did.
You know, there are people like that who did that. Yeah, then
you can
do that. Yeah, you can. You can. So those are the laws of inheritance. We should all merit to inherit the things that our family leaves us, whether they're physical or spiritual, and use them for the good. That's our intention.